Welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm Trista Polo from iwokeupawesome.com, and I am your host. Each week, we learn the story behind that vanity plate. You know the one you saw driving down the road? What did it say? What did it mean? Why did they choose it? This week, we meet the host of the top-rated MMA podcast and the Bearded Biz podcast, Eric G. Allen from Idaho. Eric broke free from a challenging childhood and a road of addiction. He built a life, a family, and a business any man would be proud of. Get to know Eric's story, his heart, and the one random moment, or was it divine intervention, that turned it around for him for good. Listen till the end to hear Eric's advice on how to pivot from a life that's not working to one that's filled with love and gratitude. Let's jump in and meet Eric. Welcome to this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story Podcast. I'm excited to be here with Eric Allen. His plate is TRMMA, which stands for Top Rated MMA. Welcome, Eric.
Thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it. Yeah. Excited to be on your show.
I'm excited to have you. So your plate represents some things that you do on a podcast and also that you love. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So Top Rated MMA, that's the podcast. That's the business I own. And we launched that in 2012. And then sometime last year, I was just like, you know what? It'd be fun to have this, the plate TRMMA. And so I went out and I got that and started to get a little bit more recognition in town. So I thought, well, maybe people might come up and see my truck. And we've got some, you know, logos on the truck as well. And so it's a podcast that I run. It's an apparel company. And, you know, we've had that around for quite some time now.
And it started as an apparel company, right?
It did. Yeah. So it started out as an apparel company in 2012. We took off way faster than we were prepared for and had so much inventory that we ended up donating a lot of it because we just made a bunch of business and rookie mistakes. And we donated it to actually people from Hurricane Katrina. We had donated it to a company down there that was able to distribute some clothing down there. But yeah, so awesome. We just made a bunch of mistakes in the early days. And in around 2017, I decided to launch this podcast, and now humbly it's been considered the number one MMA podcast out here in the Northwest.
That's awesome. Now, what part of the Northwest are you in?
Based out in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho.
Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, a place I have never been. What's Idaho most known for besides potatoes?
We love our freedom out here. So we have a lot of guns and there's a lot of, you know, a lot of people would just love being safe. But lots of where I'm at is actually specifically very beautiful trees, lakes, mountains, everything's within about 5 miles of my house. So it's very, very beautiful out here. I used to vacation here as a kid, so it's fun to live here now.
That's awesome. Now, I want to delve in a little bit more to your business. When you started, you said you grew faster than you expected. You made a lot of mistakes. What's some advice that you could give from your failures that you've learned?
Yeah, it was, like I said, there was a lot of mistakes for sure. We bought a bunch of inventory thinking it was just going to be the hottest thing out there and sell like crazy. And, you know, we started it around this time when Tap Out was kind of this big apparel company in the MMA side of things. And not that we wanted to ever compete with them. We never thought that would be even something we would be able to do. And we didn't, but we started getting calls from guys from the UFC saying, hey, do you want to come sponsor our fighter? It's $10,000. I'm like, man, I started this company with five. So I think just taking a step back and really looking at what do you want to do and don't jump right into the inventory side of things and just stocking up on inventory before you know you can move it. That was a big thing for us is, you know, we, like I said, probably spent about $3,000 in inventory right up front and pushed probably half of that. And then the rest of it was all given it away to get our name out there. And so I think just for people who are out there starting a business, just do your research and don't jump right in until you know for certain that you're able to make some cash flow from it.
Well, I think you're right. When you get started with a new idea, especially if you're really passionate about it, you can just go whole hog. Yeah. And I'm sort of the kind of person that likes to make messes and clean it up later. At least right. I'm in action. So yeah. I definitely acknowledge you for that, like really jumping feet first into your passion. Now, it occurs to me we should take a step back. Not everybody, this is not an MMA podcast. We get a lot of different kinds of guests. So let's just be responsible for our whole audience. Can you share a little bit, what is MMA and why do you love it?
Yeah, mixed martial arts is what it is. And I think for the non-fans, a lot of people look at it as being this barbaric thing where two guys get in a cage and they're locked in there and there's no rules. And maybe in the early days, like 30 years ago, they kind of had that where there was no weight classes and there's no gloves and things like that. And over the years, it's progressed into a real sport that has rules, that has guidelines. It's very much about fighter safety and very much respectful between both fighters. And so that's what I love about the sport is guys who are doing this, some of them do it for fun. Most of them do it for as their job, especially the professional fighters, but they know that the guy across the cage from them is not somebody that they hate. They rarely have like personal beef with them. It's very much respect. No matter who wins, it's hugs, it's handshakes. Hey, thanks for your time. Maybe we'll do it again later. You know, so I love the respect side of things that comes with martial arts. And I think that's even outside of MMA, martial arts as a whole is very, very much respectful for fighters. And it's always about respectful for, you know, the sport itself. And so I think I love that part of it. I also love to see guys who get in there and put it all in the cage and win or lose. They're always typically smiling, you know, and now it's females too.
And it's females too. Right. And it's not like, like the wrestling world where they set up rivalries and create a lot of drama. And it's more like a soap opera. It's nothing like that.
That is correct. It's actually real fighting. It's actually real guys that are getting in there. They're, you know, have their gloves on and, you know, they have timed rings and, you know, the corners are there and there's doctors there to make sure that if they ever get to a point where they can't protect themselves, the rest will stop, you know. So it's very much about fighter safety now. It 30 years ago was not that way where, you know, a corner could throw a towel in and call it quits and things like that. And it wasn't as safe. But I think I've read lots of studies over the years that have said that MMA is actually safer than boxing because you take less hits to the head. And so it's very much a very safe sport if you're in the sport, right? I mean, you're going to get hurt probably at some point. You'll get some cuts or, you know, but pretty rare do you see somebody walk out with a broken bone or something like that.
I have to tell you that in case anybody listening is in my camp where I'm not really that familiar with the sport, my knowledge of it is the Ultimate Fighter Championship from the Friends episode.
Oh, okay. I never saw that episode. There is the Ultimate Fighting, the Ultimate Fighter, which was a real show, kind of a, what do you call it, reality TV. Back in the early 2000s, but okay. I never saw the Friends episode, but I'm sure that it was funny and probably was not as, I don't know, maybe it wasn't as real. I don't know. Maybe I'd have to, well, have to go back and watch it.
Yeah, they didn't actually have any fighting. So okay. Jon Favreau plays Monica's boyfriend. I think his name was Pete, and he was like this billionaire or whatever. And there's the episode where he's getting a diamond. He's ordering a diamond and she thinks it's a ring and it turns out, or a ring. So she thinks it's a diamond ring and it turns out it's the Ultimate Fighter Championship ring. And maybe they did have one episode where he went in and got his ass kicked.
Yeah. Okay.
And she's like, I just can't. And they broke up, but that's my experience with the MMA awesome. World.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So now it's a little bit deeper.
Sure. Yeah.
So you also have another podcast, right? Not just the Top MMA. Can you tell us about your other podcast?
Yeah. So both Top Rated MMA and my other show is called The Bearded Biz Show. I'm very intrigued and interested by people's stories. Why Top Rated MMA? Why do people want to get in the cage? Why do they want to go and do that as a living? And some of them just do it for fun. But I started The Bearded Biz Show to really expand the folks' stories that I could hear. So Top Rated MMA, obviously very tailored to the MMA fight game, fighters, things like that. The Bearded Biz Show really opens the door for anybody. And I've been able to talk with everybody from Ed Milet to Sean Whalen to a 14-year-old kid in England on a farm making 30 grand a year on eBay, you know? Wow. And so I just love to hear stories of people being successful in life. Maybe they've gone through a lot of hardships and then they've gotten through that. And so I love to hear that breakthrough moment in their life.
Now, you've had some breakthroughs in your life after some challenges. Are you willing to share kind of where you came from? Because I think your love of the stories of others probably comes from a pretty personal place.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I grew up in what I thought was a typical household. You know, I grew up in Eastern Washington and had lots of, you know, little league games and went to the parks with my dad and things like that. And my parents decided to get a divorce when I was 11 years old. And my mom got together with somebody else pretty quickly after that. moved me to Montana at 12 years old. And I watched a lot of physical abuse happen to my mom at that point from my mom's boyfriend. And to the point where I was at 13 years old, I actually had to fight him off. And lots of blood. My mom never pressed charges. And I think that led down a path of me being just self-destructive for a while. You know, I became addicted to drugs, smoking a lot of pot, dropping acid and eating mushrooms and drinking a lot of alcohol in my high school years and even in my early 20s. And I think I was on this real wrong path for quite some time before stepping out and breaking free from that.
Yeah, that's a lot for a kid to have to handle. What was going through your mind when you had to defend your mom?
Yeah, it was interesting. So they were always out drinking. The house that they rented for us in Montana had three bedrooms. It was my mom and her boyfriend, my little brother, who is the son that they had together, who was just a year old, and then my sister. And then there's no other rooms. And so they actually put me in the garage in Montana during the winters, which was always interesting.
Isn't it cold in Montana in the winter?
Extremely.
Yeah. Okay.
I had a fireplace out there and I would stoke the fire and get that going. That was my heat.
Oh my gosh.
And so I would do that through the winters, but they went out drinking as usual, nothing normal or nothing out of the normal. And so I was brushing my teeth. It was around probably midnight, on a Saturday night or something like that. And usually when they come home arguing, I just don't pay attention because it was just, that's what happened. But I was brushing my teeth and I literally felt something in my heart and say, man, you got to turn around and look around the corner. And so the way the house was set up is if I'm in the bathroom and I walked out and I turned to the right, that would walk down to the kitchen, to the pantry, and then to my room in the garage. And as I peeked around the corner, my mom's boyfriend was on top of her, fist after fist, punched her in the face. And I thought, I got to do something. I got to figure out how to get her off or get him off of her. And so the first thing that came to mind was grab a frying pan, which happened to be one of those cast iron pans that you take camping, those real heavy ones. And so I walked up behind him playing 12 years of baseball and swung as hard as I could and I hit him in the back of the head. And it didn't knock him out. As he turned around, he said, "What the F?" And as he was mid-sentence, I took another swing at him in the forehead and split his face open. And surprisingly, still didn't knock him out. There was a lot of blood, though, coming. And at that point, I had fallen over. And I remember him standing over me, starting to yell. And as he did that, my mom comes out of nowhere and lands like six punches in a row to the face of his face, you know, and blood's on the wall behind him. And the police finally showed up and took him to jail for the night. But I think I went into survival mode at that point, you know, when I saw that, like, and I had seen it before, but something had snapped at that point, like, hey, you know what, it's time to put a stop to this. And after that, I left and moved back to Washington to live with my dad, and my mom continued to live that lifestyle for a couple more years, which was quite interesting to me, but that's kind of the story.
It seems to me like a moment like that, where you actually take a heavy object to another person, has to change you.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just self-defense, you know, at that point. It was fight or flight, and I was in fight mode at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you said that you had a pretty long journey after that of what would you say, avoidance of, like, what do you think led you to, you know, the drug use and all that kind of stuff?
You know, it's kind of interesting. I moved back to Washington. My dad rented a house for him and I to live in. And then he went and stayed with his girlfriend. So he would put $20 in a cup and that was my lunch money for the week, and would fill the freezer up with Hunger Man meals and put cereal and milk in the house. And that was basically what I lived in all through high school. So for the next 3 years, my house was kind of parentless. And so I was able to have parties at my house. I was able to go smoke pot. I was able to drink in my house and not have to worry about anybody saying anything. And so I continued down that path. When I was 18 years old, I got arrested for having a bong, which is funny because it's now legal in the state of Washington. But
I was going to say, that wouldn't happen these days.
Right, yeah. So I actually had black and white chain gang outfit on. I mean, bright orange slippers, had to go to jail for 24 hours. And you would think that might change something, but what I did was I stopped doing pot for a year while I was on probation and then continued to drink. And so, yeah, I just had this life of like doing that. And at one point my friends said, "Hey, want to move to Seattle?" And I said, "Sure." I had $100 in my pocket and I hit the road. And then between the ages of 18 and 21, I'd moved 21 times, living on people's couches and getting through all of that. So yeah, it was kind of an interesting journey.
Wow. I always say that up to the age of 18, I moved 24 times, but you beat me because you did it in a much shorter period of time.
It was quite interesting. Yeah. Lots of couches. Sometimes I didn't know the people. It was just like a friend of a friend and, "Oh, can I stay there for a month?" "Yeah, sure. No problem." You know?
Well, you clearly turned it around. So I would love to hear, like, what was that turning point? There's typically, I think, a moment, just like when you decided to defend your mom. I mean, I don't think you decided so much as you chose in that moment. Sure. So what was it that really turned you around in your life? Because you're clearly a strong, confident, sure person. You have a level head. You have a thriving business. You're making a difference in a couple different areas, both MMA and business. Like, you're not the person that you're describing from your past. So what changed? How did you do that?
You know, it's interesting. I got a job with Universal Music out in Seattle, and that was my dream job, to go work in the music business. And I don't know how to play anything. I just was the mailroom guy, but it got my foot in the door. And so that kind of led me down more drinking, you know, free concerts and free booze for a couple of years. And I got laid off after 1 year, and I was working at Starbucks, and I was trying to just survive. I was this depressed guy. This girl had come in and said, "Hey, do you want to go to this church event? It's for college folks, just come hang out." And I didn't really have any friends. And so I said, "Yeah, sure, I'll go hang out." And so I went, and there was a lot of these small connections that were there. And I knew them from when I lived in the other side of the state and things like that. And so about a month later, it was Easter. I went out with a bunch of buddies the night before Easter, and we partied it up pretty good. And I woke up on Easter morning in my buddy's basement, surrounded by 15 or so people, and they were all passed out. But I woke up that morning and I felt God say, "Man, you're done." And I literally at that moment gave my life to Christ. I quit drinking, quit smoking, quit doing drugs right there in that moment, stopped, never did it again. And I called that girl who had invited me to that church event that day. And I got her voicemail. I said, "Hey, I just want to say happy Easter and hopefully I'll see you back at the store." Well, about a year later, or a couple months later, we're dating. A year later, we're married. And now we celebrated 15 years of being married this year.
Wow. Congratulations. Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
Do you think that her showing up and making that random invitation was divine intervention?
Totally. Yeah. 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 It was
It's too random. It's too random not to be, right?
Yeah. And, you know, oddly enough, her and I are actually born at the exact same minute. Days, different years. But on our birth certificate, it's documented 1:41 p.m. for both of us.
Wow. That's weird.
Yeah. Yeah. We were on our honeymoon. And it was like before you kind of had to have the passports. We had our birth certificates. And I was like, "Hey, what time were you born?" 1:41. What? You know, so it's just really strange. Yeah.
Just the fact that you asked that question is a little odd, but that's okay.
Right. Yeah, totally.
Like, who asked? I know what time I was born because every year my parents call me at 7:04 a.m. That is exactly when I was born. So I've always known my time of birth, but I don't think it's something most people even know, like what time they were born.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
That's wonderful. Does your wife participate in any of your business stuff, or does she kind of do her own thing?
She's the brains, right?
So
I always run things by her typically if I'm trying to, my brain goes everywhere when it comes to ideas, like, "Oh, let's do this or let's do that." And I go, she's the person that kind of holds me tight instead of letting the kite go fly off, right? You know, like, and not in a bad way. I always go to her to try to, you know, make sure that I'm making right decisions and things like that when it comes to the business side.
What do you love most about your wife?
Oh man, she's absolutely hilarious. So funny. But she also puts so many people in front of her for everything. And her and I both come from, you know, pretty broken homes. And I think maybe that's what drew us together, you know, as well. And we've been able to kind of break that legacy, or not the legacy, break those family chains of divorces, because both of our parents have been married and divorced multiple times. And we just made a decision that it was never going to happen between us. And so she's just so strong. She's definitely my hero. She's been through a lot more than I have. And she's the one person that, you know, we have two kids and she helps them be who they are, you know, like I do too, but she's there, you know, as the stay-at-home mom and putting in so much more time and work with them where I'm, you know, kind of the provider on that side of things.
That's awesome. I want to just take a moment and acknowledge her for giving you to us, right? Like, as the person put in your path, whether it was random or divine or whatever, like, you have such an aliveness to you, but it's like a peaceful, strong aliveness, which I noticed from the very first time we spoke. And I'm just so glad that she made that random invitation and you accepted, and then you did all the work that you needed to do to be who you are, because I can't imagine what the world would have missed if you hadn't been powerfully present in it.
So yeah, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for her, that's for sure.
That's awesome. So I just want to check in with you about your podcasts. You said that your top rated is actually number one in your area in the Northwest. Can you give us some podcast tips? Because I know that a lot of people are starting podcasts right now, sure. Like a zillion. Some people say we're going to have a baby boom, and others are saying we're going to have a podcast boom. I think it's both. But give some tips to new podcasters, if you wouldn't mind.
You know, here's the thing with podcasting is I was really scared to do it at first because I didn't know what I was doing. I think the first 100 episodes that I recorded of my show were actually in a walk-in closet because we didn't have space in the house. It took me a while to look into the camera versus looking at the screen. And that was a big change for me. But I think if you want to do a podcast, just do it. There's so much free access to be able to put those out and get your word or your content, whatever it is, out there today. You can do it on YouTube or you can do it through Anchor app, which is free. And it's such a great resource for people who want to do a podcast. And you can generate a little bit of money from that. So, you know, I would say if you're even thinking about doing a podcast, just do it. Don't worry about the quality. Get it out and then adjust as you go. Because I can guarantee that if I look back at my early shows, they're ridiculous. They're horrible. And even so, it's always a learning thing. And I've now done over 200 episodes combined between the two shows. And, you know, it's always a learning perspective.
Absolutely. And what about reach and promotion? I know that's the thing most people ask and that is the most mysterious. How do you grow your audience?
Yeah. You know, for me, I never really even pay too much attention to it. I do what helps me grow, and that's connecting with other people, and that's hearing people's stories. And I think eventually it'll all catch up. I continue to put content out. So be consistent. Every single Friday, I release a Beard of Biz show, and every single Saturday, I release a top rated MMA show. And that's what keeps me going. And I think that's what gets our name out. So I think if you wait too long between episodes, you'll lose listenership and things like that. Number one thing is just be consistent, and then your audience will grow with you.
You know, I think that you hit the nail on the head with the consistency. I started a YouTube channel about a year and some change ago, and I just got so frustrated with how much time it took me to get such little result in my views and my reach and my subscribers and blah, blah, blah. And I forgot that I wasn't doing it for that. I was actually doing it for the opportunity to express myself. To share a message that I thought was important to share. And what I'm realizing looking back is if I had stayed consistent because of a couple of the videos that I did that got a really, not viral, but you know, when my, maybe I'd get 100 views, it got 3,000, you know, those heavy hitter videos. Yeah. If I had just continued to be consistent, I probably would have grown a nice following on YouTube, you know, 10, 20, 50 times more than I was able to accomplish if I hadn't given up on it. And so that's what I decided when I started this podcast is it doesn't really matter how quickly it grows as long as I'm proud of the work. And it, for me, it's also about telling the stories. Now, of course, I have to remind myself of that regularly because I do go to the stats and I do want to know about what's my rank and how many views and how many subscribers and has anybody reviewed me yet? And it can be very distracting because that's what everybody talks about.
Yeah.
And so I'm going to just echo what you said. If you're doing something that you love and you're passionate about the content, who cares? Just let it go. Just enjoy yourself.
And I noticed when I first started, I was only uploading up to YouTube. And so a lot of my earlier videos have, you know, 3-figure views, some things like that. And my Facebook would have very little because I was sharing the link to Facebook. What I realized was it was better for me to upload to Facebook and YouTube. Mm-hmm. And so what that did though was my videos on YouTube maybe have 100 views or less even. And then my Facebook viewed video views though are like in the several thousands now. Yeah. And so it's just interesting. I think both options are really good. And so when I upload my shows, I go to both.
It's a mystery.
Yeah, absolutely. It is. Absolutely.
Well, that's awesome. So I always like to turn the tables and see if there's a question you have for me. So do you have a question for me?
I have two questions for you if we have time. I think we do. But I'm a music guy, so I love to ask this question. But what's a favorite band or favorite type of music that you like?
I like something you can dance to. I like something with an upbeat, and I really need it to have a positive message. These days, I am entertained by things that make me feel good. I don't watch dark TV. I don't like horror movies, and I don't listen to angry music. These days, everything I do uplifts me. And very my nice. Favorite song right now is called Good to Be Alive by Andy Grammer. Okay. And he kind of went through this whole challenging time, and he had this epiphany, and things just started to turn around for him. And now it's good to be alive. And that song always gets me going.
Love it. What's a bucket list item for you?
Can I tell you, I don't have a bucket list.
Okay.
And the reason is because I really believe in creating my life on purpose, taking 100% creative control over it, and then being responsible for all of it.
Yeah.
So I always wanted to act. I was an improv actor for 4 or 5 years, and I'll probably do that again. Yeah. I have a podcast. You know, I get to work from home. I have a dog that I love dearly. I spend time with my family when I can. I'm in a wonderful relationship with my husband. I really, because I create my life, if I want it badly enough, I just stick it in now. I don't have this like hope list that I'll maybe get to someday.
Come on. Love it. That's awesome.
That's a good question.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's a good question. Absolutely. Thank you for asking those. Yeah. So any last words, any advice? I would love to hear a final word from you on whatever you want to say. But if you have anything to say to people who are struggling to turn something around, pivot from something that's not working to a life they can really embrace like you have?
You know, it's always a learning, always a learning day for me. Every day is learning. And so I start my day listening to a motivational video, you know, get morning habits and be consistent with those, whether that's waking up and being in prayer or quiet time or meditation, whatever. But if you stick to them, I think that really helps set the day, sets the tone for the day. And for me, I just have this mindset of just loving on people. So if that's you, or maybe you know, I'm not the judge of anybody, and it doesn't matter to me what people have in their life going on or anything like that. But if I just love on people where they're at, then it might lift them up and they might go do the same to somebody else. So for me, it doesn't matter what their political stance is or sexual orientation or anything like that. I just love on people, and hopefully people can just get that message and go do the same and just spread love.
Perfect way to end this podcast episode. Eric, I'm so happy to have had you on the Plate Story podcast. And I just wish you so much success, abundance, and love in your life.
Thank you so much. It's been such an honor to be on your show. Thank you, Trista.
Thanks for joining us for this week's episode of Trista's Plate Story podcast. Please subscribe to Trista's Plate Story podcast to get the story behind all those vanity plates driving with you on the road. And if you would like to nominate the owner of a license plate, including you, or visit any of our partners and sponsors, come see us at platestory.com. That's PL8story.com, and give us the details. If you enjoyed this episode, please drop a review and give us a share. I'm Trista Polo, wishing you well on the road to your next adventure.